is I do think it'll buy us back something, our value.
Oh, of course.
So
it's a school day.
Here we are.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Ready? House Committee on Revenue will come to order. We have two public hearings scheduled for this morning, and we'll open the one on House Bill 3585. Bazin.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, House Bill 3585 is a bill that is similar to two other ones that we've seen, at least in going through the process, and they all talk about the same issue, and the issue is basically allowing counties and special counties, the ones who receive the federal ONC fund or the forest payments, to use those federal revenues in a slightly different way. Today we have, and since 2007 session, the Senate Bill 808 allowed those federal forest lands, federal forest revenues, to be used for not only schools and roads, but to be used in patrolling roads, at least in two counties. And these two counties in the statutes are for Douglas County and Lane County. The House Bill 3585 adds Josephine County to those two counties in order to allow that use of this money.
Great. Thank you. Representative Hicks, you're up.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Representative Wally Hicks. I represent Josephine County. As staff very aptly described, this bill is similar to a bill that was passed in a previous session. This deals with essentially federal pass-through dollars. I'm not an economist, but I do predict that this would have basically minimal, if any, fiscal impact to the state. I don't know where the fiscal impact would necessarily be, but what the bill does specifically is adjust the decision point as to how the money is spent. Currently under state law, the counties can spend this particular dedicated fund for basically infrastructure purposes, and it is permissible under the state law, if the legislature should so authorize, to allow the county commission to decide whether to spend this particular fund on patrol, either in its entirety or in portion, or to continue spending it on the infrastructure purpose. The amount of money we're talking about here is roughly 1.425 million. It has traditionally been 1.425 million, so basically 1.5 million. Is where the projection is. Sheriff Gil Gilbertson here is going to handle the bulk of the presentation, and I think very aptly bring into focus the urgency and importance of this particular bill at this particular moment. I just want to emphasize to the committee that this is a decision point for the committee. What the sheriff is going to describe is going to be a very, very, I think, dire law enforcement situation here, a public safety situation here, that is imminent in Josephine County. And if the committee either declines to pass this bill or simply sort of allows it to fall by the wayside, then remember, you know, that is an affirmative decision as well, which will lead to the inevitable consequence that the sheriff is going to describe. So that said, the sheriff has put together a really excellent presentation that is available also on, or should be available, on the OneNote or the corresponding version of that that LRO uses. And I now turn it over to Sheriff Gil Gilbertson.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee. I think you've
and would well. You would you identify yourself for the record, sure. And then go ahead and make your statement.
I'm Gil Gilbertson, Sheriff in Josephine County.
Thank you.
In Josephine County, after all the taxes are collected and distributed, only 8% remains to support all county government services. Historically, staffing levels for the sheriff's office have been a continuing nightmare. Trying to recruit and retain personnel is very difficult. Josephine County became a training and recruiting facility for many other agencies. Over the years, many of these deputies have simply walked across the hallway to work for the city police for $1,000 more a month. Well over $10 million has been wasted in replacement and training of new personnel. Additionally, it can take up to 18 months to qualify for full status. Federal government controls 70% of Josephine County. This property is not on the tax rolls, and thereby creating a fiscal hardship on the local government. This is not endemic to just Josephine County, but is realized by all of the ONC counties. County law enforcement was solely dependent upon the 1937 ONC funding, later supported from the Secure Rural Schools Act, until recently. In 2007, the county general fund began to partially support the sheriff's office. The final federal drawdown payments occur this next fiscal cycle, which is 12-13 that I'm referring to. The residual funding is sorely inadequate to sustain meaningful law enforcement. We have learned to tighten our belts and still manage to provide an adequate level of service, reduced crime, and a proven track record of doing this for less money than many other agencies. The following information is based upon a 50% reduction of funding. This is an ORS mandate service. Our state-of-the-art jail can accommodate 262 inmates if necessary. However, we have never realized the full use of our jail. The jail is a proven behavioral modifier if used properly. We work closely with community corrections and the district attorney towards that objective. Without additional funding to support the sheriff's office, our jail will realize a drastic reduction in service. As you can see from the chart, we'll go from, we're currently about 150 to 80 inmates. This will adversely affect the cities of Grants Pass and Cave Junction, as well as the state police. To utilize a jail, it must be done safely. With current staffing, we can handle between 140 and 160 inmates. In the event we lose employees, deputies will be withdrawn from patrol to assume those positions, which creates a negative impact on the patrol function. One only needs to review the recent law enforcement issues in Klamath County to see the overall impact within a community. Due to the large volume of inmates passing through a county jail, coupled with the legally required tasks, it takes a large number of staff to accommodate a 24/7 operation. If I could just briefly refer to the chart up there. If you had 500 inmates in a county jail versus the penal institution, in a 12-month period in prison, you would only cycle through probably 200 of those inmates. In a county jail, with that same 500 base to work from, that actual number is an actual number. 4,800 people were cycled through. We process people. We don't keep them long term. Prison keeps them longer term. Now we see the state seeking solution to reduce their cost of housing inmates within the penal institutions. However, to shift the burden from their system to the already fiscally depressed and dysfunctional counties is not a viable remedy. This is another ORS mandate service for patrol. Although we lack enough road deputies to accommodate 24/7 coverage, we are currently providing an adequate level of service, evidenced by our ability in reducing property crimes by 29%, reduction of crimes against society such as disturbances, disorderly conduct, minors in possession, 16%, and reducing traffic accidents by 49%. We now have two patrol units assigned to traffic enforcement, monitoring, and accident reconstruction. We're also looking at expanding into drug interdiction. Without adequate funding, this progress and continued efforts will be lost. Patrol function is key to a safe community. The first to respond to a call for help is patrol. Whatever follows that response is incidental. The outcome can range widely from custodial to a report only. The patrol function is usually the backbone, I'm sorry, they are truly the backbone of any law enforcement agency. When faced with a fiscal dilemma and the subsequent layoffs, it becomes critical for patrol to maintain adequate staffing, as they must assume the duties that normally are conducted by others that did not survive the personnel cuts. Agencies, employers, have found themselves in bankruptcy from cases where an officer lost their life. In these incidents, the agency was held negligent for not providing an adequate level of safety or a backup for these officers. We live in a litigious society, and these payouts can be in the tens of millions of dollars. In the first 3 months of this year alone, 51 officers have lost their lives. In Josephine County, it can take up to 60 minutes or longer, running lights and siren, to reach an officer in trouble. Now, I've changed the final page on this, and I'd like to read from my notes. You'll get a copy of an updated version of this. I believe this bill was carefully drafted with the public's interest in mind. I also believe planning to deal with critical situations is the responsible thing to do. With the looming threat of a financial meltdown in the not-so-distant future, the community needs to know that we are exploring all possible options to deal with any potential crisis. Finally, as the sheriff, I'm not asking for a definitive amount or even a percentage of this revenue stream, but rather this body of law, lawmakers consider providing the county commissioners with authority to exercise both discretion and flexibility in shifting funds to support public safety needs if necessary. Thank you very much.
If I may, thank you.
Please.
Mr. Chair, and Sheriff, could I ask you to go back to the patrol slide, a few slides back that...
This one?
One before... There it is. So this is the slide that shows the current status of patrol and the projected status of patrol. This is the track we're currently on fiscally. This is not a sky is falling situation. When Sheriff Gilbertson took office 4 years ago, the patrol level was actually 12 hours a day. So, of course, the flip side of that is 12 hours a day, if you call the police, nobody's coming, unless you get a state trooper there, funded, of course, by us in this building, but there's only about two of them for a county that's geographically, I think, the size of Connecticut. You get where I'm going on that. I mean, and so law enforcement coverage has been traditionally rather thin. Sheriff Gilbertson, through extremely astute economic practices, has managed to get us up to 20 hours a day. But saying we're going to go down to 8 hours a day, that's true. So the flip side of that is, of course, 16 hours a day. Believe it or not, you know, and it's important that people be able to relate to this. You call the police, nobody's coming. This is dire. I do need to emphasize, too, a couple of points, that this is not a decision, because this bill is not without its detractors, but this is not a decision as to how the money is being spent. That is not what the legislature is being asked to decide specifically. The decision is to who should make the decision, basically. Should it be the legislature in this building who decides that the money is not going to be accessible to the county commissioners for patrol, or is it the county commissioners who decide that? That's the decision that this bill contemplates. Additionally, I do want to show or emphasize that Section 1, Sub 4 includes a sunset provision of January 2, 2014. And so this is designed as a bridge to get us at least to that point. This would be basically a one-time, under the course of this bill, a one-time decision by the county commissioners during the next fiscal year as to whether they want to allocate a portion of this money or all of this money for the patrol purposes versus the long-term infrastructure purposes. And that, I do strongly feel, is a decision best made at the local level. There is a sentiment that Salem is out of touch, that Salem doesn't care. You know, that this would, I think be an example of that, that's just not accurate. So with that, I do
think... And it clearly isn't true for you.
It's not true for me. No, Mr. Chair, it's not. I do care a lot.
Questions for the panel. Yes, Representative Brewer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a technical question, which I know Representative Hicks can answer. Section 4.5, the September 27th, 2007 date, I don't know what it says received before, on, or after that date. What does that mean, and why is that date important?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eric Brewer. This date, September 27, 2007, I'm not the accountant, but I think this reflects the fiscal year, probably, and I don't know whether the federal government...
It's Sean Cassidy's birthday, I know that.
Oh.
But besides that, I don't think it's the fiscal year.
I'd be veering into speculation as to how that date got on there. I mean, I think a fiscal year begins October 1st, right. So maybe the federal government...
Let me try the answer to that one, because I think I know.
Good.
This statute was originally adopted, as you can see, to apply to Douglas County and Lane County, and September 27, 2007 is the effective date of that bill.
Gotcha.
And now we're amending that bill. So amending that bill means you got to stick the date in.
I gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mary Botkin, is there anyone else who would like to be heard on this bill? Mary, good to see you this morning.
Good morning.
You will have company.
Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. I actually signed up against this, and I want to be real clear. AFSCME represents a whole bunch of folks who work in Josephine County. We care about rural Oregon, and we care about the timber money, and we probably care about the timber money almost more than anybody else. I have been working on timber funding for, in one shape or another, my entire career with AFSCME. But in 1993, we finally got some acknowledgement by the federal government that if you were going to lock down all the forest and not allow us to harvest another tree in Oregon, we needed to figure out a way to subsidize those counties that were dependent upon forest receipts. And the federal government did establish a policy at that point of sending funds back to Oregon and back to the timber-dependent states. And it was called the Secure Rural Schools and yada, yada. That is all the history of this. Now, all these years later, I hear people referring to the Secure Rural Funds subsidies as welfare for states with trees. I'm trying to figure out just exactly how our trees are somehow different than tobacco farmers and sugar beet farmers in the South. You know,
you're getting a head nod from the sheriff.
We do not cause cancer. We do not rot teeth. Our trees don't do anything but provide clean air. And my attitude at this point is, if you're not going to let us cut our trees and you're going to decide that the 70% of the land that you own in Josephine County is off limits, then you got to pay us for it. That's my attitude. And you don't have to pay us for a year. You have to pay us forever. Because our trees will be there forever. Having said that, it is not that I am opposed to the sheriff getting funding. It is not that I'm opposed to using those funds for appropriate uses. My concern is that some of this money is pretty defined about how you can use it. And when we start mixing up the money and using it for other purposes, then I do have some concern about how long we continue to get this money and how we continue to how do we continue to argue it. I am, and my union is, committed to a long-term funding solution for rural Oregon. And for those counties that have a majority of their land locked down by the federal government and are not able to put it on the tax rolls and are not able to derive any sort of income from it. This is not a timber issue by itself. This is a funds issue. This is, where do we get the money? The citizens of Josephine County have turned down a public safety levy three times. They have said, we don't need any public safety in Josephine County. And three times, we have found a way to fund it. And we find a way to fund it at the risk and at the cost of mental health services and other services, road funds. I mean, we find the money from somewhere else, and we reward bad behavior by finding the money somewhere else, thereby emphasizing to citizens, not to worry, we'll find the money somewhere. At some point, we have to say we can't find the money anymore. And I don't... You know, this is the third bill this session I think I've seen. Klamath County is calling it a loan. You know, Douglas and Lane County have already got it. I mean, this is, you know, I don't often speak against bills with somebody who has a right to carry a gun and shoot me legally. But, and it's not about this sheriff. It's not about the Klamath County sheriff. It's that's not what this is about. What this is about is we need to find a better solution to those timber funds and a long-term solution. And maybe it gets mixed up with something along the lines of, I don't know, sustainable harvesting, responsible timber management. I don't call the biscuit burn responsible timber management. And that's what happens. We need to figure out a long-term solution to the loss of funding for these counties that have so much of their property and their landmass locked up by the federal government. And I'm not even going to begin to talk about whether or not that's an appropriate action or not. I mean, that's way above my pay grade. But I do think that we really need to think about how we're spending this money, what it's dedicated for, if it's dedicated, if it's supposed to go one place or another, and what the response is to rural Oregon when the citizens that they represent continually turn down any sort of levy that would bring into the modern age a better taxing policy. And I don't know what the answer is, but I just simply had to say something at the risk of, you know, speaking against Representative Hicks's bill. But, you know, I don't necessarily think Josephine County ought to be the one that we turn down since we're approving other people's. But I do think that the committee needs to think about sort of the long-term implications of these decisions and how we're making them. Thank you.
Thank you. Please.
Chair Barnhart, Vice Chairs, Committee for the Record, Bill Sluthing, Carpenters and Joiners and Council. I can't voice any more than what Mary has just quoted to you. Here's your ONC counties, 18 of them. We have went from $550 million every 2 years till next January, it'll be $12 million. That's not enough for postage stamps for these counties. I cannot fault the Sheriff's Department. I'm not going to argue against their bill. They have public safety in mind. They have their personnel in mind. What we have done, we've totally destroyed rural Oregon. We had a chance to solve this problem. I admit the first BLM proposal that came out was...
Well, do you have comments about this bill?
Yes.
Please, would you make those comments?
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm like Mary. I can't back this proposal. The intent of this money was for schools and roads, but once you open that door, what little reserve these counties have, once you open the door, everybody will be trying to walk through. But if I may just carry this program just one step further, sir. We could have had a working program on the ground with the second Whopper plan. And our previous governor even refused to look at it. We could have had people working. We could have had people on the ground. We could have been generating revenues for these counties. It did not happen. Again, BLM is looking at another program.
Thank you. We're talking about this bill, and the question is whether or not we should allow Josephine County to use some of these funds for the sheriff's office. So if you could confine your remarks to that, that would be really helpful this morning.
I will, sir. Thank you. That's the end of my comment.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would echo some of the comments that Ms. Botkin made. I'm choosing to interpret your comments as not necessarily opposition to this bill, but as part of the broader conversation around unshackling counties as they attempt to consider multiple ways to meet their budget challenges. And I think there is that has been a conversation in this committee about how we best give counties the tools to meet the challenges that they have. And so I would take your comments in that larger context and think that needs to be part of the discussion for this committee as well. But I do have a question for staff, perhaps. Am I reading this correctly, that this would sunset in 2014?
That's correct.
Okay. And that this already applies to two other counties?
Yes, it does. It applies to Douglas and Lane County. However, Josephine is asking, and I think
Klamath
County in Senate Bill 189 is also asking for that. And just to be complete with the record, there is an attempt also to remove the sunset by Senate Bill 334.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
I appreciate your testimony and the history lesson as well. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3585 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2179. Representative Tomei, thank you for your patience.
Oh, happy to be here. May I bring up a couple of people?
Please,
with me,
please
Mr.
do.
Chair?
And are you on this one too, Madison?
Yes.
Please, go ahead.
Okay, and I sent some materials earlier.
Right, we'll let Mazin give us a summary, right, and then it'll be your turn to go right ahead.
Right, I'm new to this process.
Thank you.
Chairman Hart, members of the committee, House Bill 2179 continues with the theme of counties trying to bridge over trouble. The bill comes to you from previously going to the Committee on Business and Transportation, I believe, and it passed with a recommendation. And this bill basically attempts to look at certain things that we might have missed when we were looking at the House Bill 2001. House Bill 2001 of the 2009 session. It was one of the major legislation of that session on the transportation front. The House Bill 2001, one of the things that it did at that time is undo what used to be known by the counties as the web, being the holding the counties from getting local registration fees and transportation fees before that they get citizens approval or county citizen approval for those.
The House Bill 20, House Bill 2001, gave the counties the ability to at least it gave them the ability to do it when they had 350,000 residents and above them. That, of course, qualifies few counties in the state, about four of them. It gives them the ability to do this by the county county board, commissioners, and allow them to raise their fees. However, it did that in two steps. First, it allowed the counties to do it, providing that they're doing this immediately to build a bridge over the Willamette in the city of Portland. And I guess we did everything in that bill not to say the Selwood Bridge. But in order to make it also a little more open and flexible if possible. However, the thing that happened with all these bills that we do in very quick time frame, and I remember that we were at one time trying to write certain things at about 9:30 at night
on a Friday
that some of these language and some of these sections don't necessarily end up carrying the same intent that needed to be carried. And in this one, we had those two conditions. First, giving the county, the Multnomah County, Washington, of course, being a 350,000, and Clackamas, the ability to raise the registration fees, and then allowing the rest to have that ability by 2013. And that 2013 date would bring in with it a 40% split for the cities and counties. So that, in a way, translated to that policy being applicable to those counties after 2013. The bill in front of you, and at least the amendments, we have three amendments, and those are trying to resolve these issues. But the one that you probably need to be looking at this point is the Dash 3 amendment. The Dash 3 amendment allows what it actually does, it realigns all these statutes within House Bill 2001 and goes back to the idea of giving the counties, basically in the metro area, the right to increase the registration fees. However, it allows them to bond, because that was not explicitly obvious in the House Bill 2001, but not only to allow them to bond, but to continue using those bonds, those registration fee revenues, from the time that they started it after the 2009, to pay for these bonds. Meaning after 2013, when the new allowance of registration fees comes in, those ones will not, the ones that are used for the bridge, are not considered as part of the 40% split, nor they would be in the same way that they are treated today. So those are the two policy decisions that you have. Is first of all that to clarify the intent that those registration fee revenues that you allowed the counties in 2009 or by House Bill 2001, that will not be subject to the 40% split coming 2013. And in addition, the other policy decision that you have in front of you is once you have allowed counties to do this in 2013, are you allowing them also to use these registration fee revenues for bonds and payment for those bonds?
Thank you. Thank you. And don't you really want to be on this committee?
Oh, I was thinking the same thing. Thank goodness I'm on judiciary.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to come here today. I'm State Representative Carolyn Tomei, representing Milwaukee and portions of Southeast Portland. And in particular, I represent the Selwood neighborhood, home of the Selwood Bridge. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about House Bill 2179. This measure, as you're hearing, is a technical fix to last session's transportation package, House Bill 2001. This is needed to move the Selwood Bridge project forward. This bill does not impact the state, nor does it give new authority to the counties, but it does give certainty around the financing plan. It has taken many, many years to get to this point where we're ready to reconstruct the Selwood Bridge. And if you've ever driven over that bridge, you realize it is not a moment too soon. This bridge is functionally and structurally obsolete. It rates 2 out of 100 on a bridge sufficiency scale. This narrow two-lane bridge has a single substandard sidewalk and no bike lanes, which doesn't stop the bikes going over, but it's frightening. Buses and heavy trucks are prohibited from crossing, and that means a great deal in the neighborhood because they were very dependent on buses. Buses can no longer go over that bridge. I've participated in extensive planning with my constituents and other community members to choose a locally preferred alternative in bridge design. We are very proud of it. The city, the county, state, and federal agencies, including the congressional delegation, are all involved and have finally reached consensus. After many, many years of discussion, we are ready to move forward with construction next year, hopefully. I'm also very pleased that we're ready to move forward on a project that will generate jobs for Oregonians. Based on construction figures, this project is estimated to create 4,000 jobs. We have representatives from Multnomah County here to explain the technicalities to you, and I urge you to please support this wonderful bill.
Thank you. Commissioner.
Good morning. Co-Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Kogan. I'm the chair of the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners, and I appreciate the opportunity to come here this morning and testify in support of House Bill 2179. First, I'd like to mention that we do support the proposed amendment to this bill. We believe these minor technical changes recommended by the Revenue Committee staff improve the bill. But now I'd like to speak to the primary purpose of the bill. As was discussed a few weeks ago in the Transportation Committee, and as was just mentioned by Representative Tomei, this is a technical fix to House Bill 2001, the Oregon Jobs and Transportation Act that was passed by the legislature in 2009. As you probably recall, House Bill 2001 gave permission to Multnomah County and Clackamas County to enact local vehicle registration fee increases for the purpose of designing, replacing, engineering, and constructing a new Selwood Bridge. The issue and the reason we're here today with House Bill 2179 is that the original language, crafted late at night, did not specify that the revenue could be collected from a vehicle registration fee could be used to pay debt service and costs related to bonds. Although it was clear this was the legislative intent, our bond counsel has advised us that in order to provide unqualified opinions to investors and be able to sell bonds, a pledge of these fees needs to be clear in statute. It needs to be clear that these are actually allowed to be bonded. House Bill 2179 simply clarifies this point by adding language that, quote, may be used to pay debt service and costs related to bonds or other obligations issued for such purposes. We're here with some urgency because we need to move forward with the financing of this project. As Representative Tomei has mentioned, we've reached consensus with our local partners in the state, and we have a federal record of decision that allows us to move forward on construction next year. This is truly a shovel-ready project. I think it bears repeating that after 85 years, the Selwood Bridge is functionally obsolete and structurally obsolete. And as you've heard and know well, it has a federal rating of 2 out of 100. At the same time, the bridge is the busiest two-lane bridge in the state of Oregon, carrying over 30,000 vehicles daily. Replacing this bridge will improve connections, operations, and safety for vehicles, pedestrians, and bicycles, And as Representative Tomei mentioned, I think it's important to remember this project will create jobs for Oregonians at a time that we need jobs most. Again, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
I'm Mark Campbell. I'm, finance director for the county. I'm just here to be available
to answer any questions. Please. Thank you. Questions? Yes, Representative Juan.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I see from your testimony, welcome.
Thank you.
It's good to see you again. I see that you've reached consensus with your local partners with regard to this project.
Yes.
Who from East County, Fairview, Troutdale, Wood Village, or Gresham have you been working with on this?
Well, frankly, Representative Juan, the East County cities have not been at the table in terms of the negotiations, but they've been aware of what's been going on. Commissioner McKeel, who represents East County on the Multnomah County Board, has been part of the entire process, has been in touch with the East County cities, and has been keeping them appraised. We've received no indication at all from any of the East County cities that they have any problems with the bridge design as it's been put forward and the funding package that we've put together.
Okay. A couple of points. I think that this is not a technical fix, with respect. I think that what you're looking at here is what I have referred to as the biggest sellout of East County in the last 35 years. When we talk about empowering Multnomah County to impose this tax, what they really did is they took away our right to vote. Prior to HB 2001, which was drafted in the middle of the night, 43-page bill, tucked into Section 40 on page 11 was this provision that took away our right to vote. The East County cities were never consulted. I was a city councilor in Troutdale. I never heard that this was going to happen. I never heard that our right to vote was going to be taken away. And most importantly, I never heard that we were going to lose a 40% revenue share that was set forth in statute and that had been there for decades. We were blindsided by this in the city of Troutdale. We didn't know that this was happening, and we didn't have the opportunity to consult with anybody. Nobody from East County was at the table having this discussion. The 40% revenue share amounts to approximately $50.8 million out of the $127 million raised by Multnomah County as a result of this tax. In return for that, we were told that we got a $24 million interchange at the Troutdale exit from the I-84 freeway, a reduction, in my mind, of 50% of what we were due. We were also told that we would be getting a courthouse, which, of course, was a promise that was 60 years in the making, which I personally consider to be past consideration. The press also didn't know about this. I spoke with the reporter at the Gresham Outlook who wrote the article on this particular issue, and they were taken by surprise as well. Over the course of the last year or two, I've often wondered who at the county lobbied for this. The Willamette Week at one point suggested that it was the former chair. He assures me that he didn't do that. Other folks have wondered, but there's never been a clear indication of who in Multnomah County pushed for this or why. There's never been a clear indication about why this bridge that connects East Multnomah or East Moreland and Westmoreland and Dunthorpe, two of the wealthiest neighborhoods in the entire county, should be the beneficiary and the recipient of a regressive vehicle registration fee that hits folks in my count in my part of the county the hardest, because the people in my part of the county have the lowest median incomes. If you can sense the frustration, I want you to understand that part of my frustration is that in the course of all of this, it wasn't even drafted properly. And having not drafted it properly, this went through another committee in this building within the last several weeks, and I didn't even know that this bill was coming. I didn't know it was a subject in this building when I am here to serve East County and the residents of Troutdale, Fairview, and Wood Village. I didn't get any advance warning either. This is not an easy issue for me, colleagues. It is very likely that I will not be able to support this. I hope to be able to mull this over and work on it over the next several days and weeks to try to come to some sort of a resolution. But it's very difficult to be asked to move forward and participate in something that I feel is so incredibly egregious. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wand. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. A few questions. Chair Kogan, did House Bill 2001 give you the ability to raise vehicle registration fees?
Yes, it did.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
And what was the purpose of those registration fees?
I think specifically the design, engineering, construction of a new Selwood Bridge, or I believe as it was designed, it was intended as a Selwood Bridge, I believe a new bridge across the Willamette River.
Follow up, Mr. Kutcher? And do you have the ability to use that now in an unqualified way to serve the debt on the bonds that the vehicle registration fee is intended to support?
No, we don't. As our bond counsel has told us, although it's clear from the legislation that it was intended to allow us to do this, because of the requirements of the bond market, they felt that the certainty was needed that the legislation specify that in order to that it was allowable to issue to pay debt service. So it's not a question of legally from in terms of the state of Oregon it needed to be there. I think the legislature actually drafted a bill that was successful in meeting its legal requirements, but the bond market requirements are such that it doesn't allow us to sell the bonds.
Well, Mr. Co-Chair. And I'm curious, you mentioned this sufficiency rating of 2 out of 100 on the Selwood Bridge. You don't happen to know off the top of your head, do you, the sufficiency rating on the I-35W bridge in Minnesota that collapsed in 2007?
It was approximately 50 out of 100.
Comment, Mr. Co-Chair?
Please. Yeah.
Thank you. With all due respect to my colleague from East County, this is a technical fix. And the reality is that you have the ability to raise the money already. Now the voters need to be able to see the results of what they're paying for. And what they authorized and what we authorized was vehicle registration fees to support the Selwood Bridge. That was the discussion in the last session. And although we've had some joking on this committee about House Bill 2001 being written in the middle of the night, the fact is that we had weeks and weeks and weeks of public testimony and public hearings on House Bill 2001. I served on that committee. I was part of that process along with many members of this committee. And the reality is that stakeholders from across the county and across the state had ample opportunity to voice both support and opposition for all of the provisions within House Bill 2001. And after months of careful negotiation and careful consideration, we came to a bill that achieved bipartisan support, partly because it addressed what is one of the most serious safety issues in the entire nation, not just this state. The bridge in Minnesota, as we heard, had a sufficiency rating of 50 out of 100, and it collapsed. Selwood Bridge is a 2. People are scared. This is one of the most vital bridges for transportation across the Willamette River, and people are afraid to drive over it. And because of that, they've authorized a little bit extra out of their pockets through vehicle registration fees. We've had this discussion in the legislature, and now they need to get what they've paid for. That's all this bill is about. And going back to the past and rehashing the discussions from last session is simply not part of this debate. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify something in my mind, whether our conversation today is about 2179 or the Dash 3 amendment. And I guess I need to know, you folks that are testifying today, are you referring to the Dash 3 amendments in your testimony, or are you just referring to the original bill that I had the pleasure of reviewing in the Transportation Committee before it came here?
I believe we're referring to the 2179 as amended. As opposed to be amended.
I mean, yes, please.
You mean the Dash 3 amendment that I'm looking at here?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'm having a hard time calling this a technical fix. and I just refer, of course, to the language found on page 3, which imposes a vehicle weight restriction, and then the language on page 4, which takes away the restriction on the use of the funds completely and it extends the use of registration fees to counties with populations of less than 350,000. seems to me that this is a massive change. Maybe you can address that. Maybe I'm misunderstanding.
What I'd like to do is to actually go through this amendment. I appreciate the comments that you've made, Representative. I think, by my quick look, that what happened with some of those items is that they just simply got moved to different parts of the bill, of the law. But I may have misunderstood that. I'd like to just parse this thing so we understand it.
Excellent. Thank you.
And I'm particularly interested in Section 1, which basically, as I understand it, says that this bill applies, or at least the amendments to ORS 301.041 apply to ordinances that are enacted after July 1st or become effective after July 1st, 2013, and for ones that are effective before that date, the old 801.041 applies. And then could you sort of parse this so that we can understand the changes that have been made?
Absolutely.
And point out where things have simply been moved from one place to another.
And, Mr. Chair, when you're doing that, you're referring to the Dash 3 amendments?
I am referring to the Dash 3.
Thank you.
The original bill is pretty simple.
Yep.
I mean, as I read it, it basically makes one change in a couple of places that makes it clear that the money may be used to pay debt for service and costs related to bonding.
Oh.
And now we're talking about making some other changes.
Right. Thank you.
Oh, Co-Chair Barnhart, for the record, I'm Nancy Bennett with Multnomah County, and I testified before the Transportation Committee, and we were looking at 2179 and its original. When the bill got referred to revenue, we talked with the committee staff and sort of discovered that maybe there was some ambiguity or some clarity needed with the bill in terms of the what I'd like to refer to as sort of the Selwood VRF, and then what happens after 2013. And the original intent, as I recall, in House Bill 2001 was to allow this sort of, you know, special situation, this crisis situation with the Selwood Bridge, this allow Multnomah County and Clackamas County to have a VRF specifically designed for the Selwood Bridge. But then, and as you may recall, there was a moratorium on counties doing a VRF. After 2013, other counties could enact a VRF, but the cost-sharing provisions would go back in place. But it was sort of a clumsy drafting of that because the intent was sort of to allow this one situation for Selwood Bridge and then to allow a different VRF, opportunity after that point. So I think that the committee staff came, sort of recognized that some clarity needed to be made in this. That's why these provisions didn't come up in transportation, because we weren't aware of that problem, basically. So I just want to clarify that for Representative.
That's why bills like this come to.
We appreciate that. And I think this is actually, we still believe a technical changes that the underlying intent has not changed. There's no new authority here.
Well, I've noticed, for example, that the reference to the 40% is taken out of one section and is inserted back in again on page 5. Some of the other pieces that refer to counties of less than 350,000 are removed on page 2 and stuck back in on page 4, or something close to that anyway. And could you explain what the point of this is?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I was hoping to confuse you a little bit with this.
You've succeeded. Now clarify. Now unconfuse us.
All right. Well, when we were looking at House Bill 2001, the main issue that was discussed, and I guess the policy that was decided at that time, is we will be giving the counties the ability to raise registration fees in general, and then we needed to be also specific for a certain time. The specific one was to do it for the metro counties, but primarily Multnomah and Clackamas, to build the bridge. And we'll do this in 2009. Then, as time comes, we will give that ability for the rest of the counties. And the rest of the counties were parsed into two sets of counties. The counties that are 350,000 in population and above.
And which counties are they?
These counties are four counties in the state, usually. It's Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington, and Lane County.
Okay.
So in 350,000 plateau, if you will come back into play in 2013 and says those counties could actually do it now and have registration fees by their boards. Everybody else who doesn't have that have enough ability, if you will, to continue the requirements of taking those to the public vote. Now, the 40% split goes back with the 2013 saying that if we had that in statutes before and that was intended, and that continues with all registration fees. But when we did that, the way ORS 801041, if you will, contained that language. So what we had to do at that time, saying, here's the new requirement, which is the temporary requirement or the temporary allowance for the counties to do this right away in 2009. You counties of meet that threshold of 350,000. You could go now and raise your registration fees. Then comes 2013, everybody else gets that right. However, we will make that specific in law that this is in 2013 when it comes. And that's when you see the repeal, if you will, here that we have. Insert the repealing section 41, which is the one that says you do it in 2013. So why we had to repeal it, because at that time, it wasn't clear whether the temporary allowance for raising registration fees goes under the permanent split with the 40%.
All right. So could I try to help along this a little bit?
Sure.
I'm looking at Section 1, and it basically says that Section 3 applies after ordinances that take effect after July 1, 2013. Section 2 is the statute that would apply as soon as this bill becomes effective.
That's correct. That's the temporary.
Section 3 amend that statute, but by the operation of Section 4 only becomes effective on July 1, 2013. So what you've done, as I perceive it, is you've written a statute now that applies until July 1, 2013, and a different statute in the same bill, in Section 3, that doesn't take effect until July 1, 2013.
Right. It's a double amend.
Right. So it's a double amend. So that's why you moved everything around.
And
that's why it looks like you moved everything around. Now, what I would really like it is if you could parse what's in the document, so we can understand what's in the document.
All right.
Am I helping clarify at all? Mm-hmm. We're actually doing a statute that takes effect as soon as this bill takes effect,
yeah.
And then a different, then a replacement for the same statute, which takes effect on July 1, 2013.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead, please.
So Section 1 says that Section 3, as you were saying, Mr. Chair, takes effect in July 1st, 2000. And Section 3 basically goes back to the permanent formula of the 40%.
So this becomes the long-term general
rule.
That's
the long-term intent of the policy.
Co-Chair Barnhart, may I make a comment? Again, I think that the intention with this amendment that committee staff has identified was kind of the need to make that distinction between these two issues, so that we don't undo. If the Selwood Bridge VRF again became inoperable in 2013, we can't build the bridge. We need this to this VRF sort of stands alone. And then what comes after that, if their county, other counties were to enact a VRF, it would apply, those other rules, if you will apply to that. And so that's kind of, I think, the distinction that we're trying to make here. And it is incredibly complicated. I have to say that I had to read this many times myself. And as Mazen is talking, I'm
Could I back
confused.
Up just for a second, just so I understand? The first part, Section 2, basically allows the allows the for the construction of a bridge. That's the language on the bottom of the first page. Allows the for the construction of a bridge, and you have an ordinance that collects money to do that.
Yes.
And that ordinance is in effect now.
Yes, it is.
All right. Then, and this very specific language on the bottom of page one just talks about the bridge, and that's why the material on the top of page two that refers to the population of less than 350,000 is gone, because counties with other counties have no interest in building the bridge, just those two.
Right.
So we have a very specific rule that applies to Multnomah County and Clackamas County for the purpose of building a bridge, and that's what the statute in Section 2 does.
Yes.
Okay. Section 3 amends that July 1st, 2013. So ordinances that take effect after that date come under this new statute. So in the meantime, the ordinance that you have in effect now can be used to pay the bond until the bond is paid off.
Yes.
Because it's in effect before 2013. Right? Okay, I've got that part.
Yes.
I'm getting head nods, so obviously I figured this part of it out.
Yes.
Then we repeal the piece that refers to the bridge, because the statute was intended to become general across the state, and, well, at least general...
across the state, that's correct.
Yeah.
For all counties.
And that counties with populations of less than 350,000 have to ask the voters for permission. That's what the language on the top of page 4 says, if I understand that correctly. So I assume that means that the other four counties you mentioned don't have to ask permission. They can just do it.
Right.
All right. And then that amendment includes the 40% piece, so that if you were to adopt an ordinance that takes effect after July 1, 2013, you would come under this statute, and 40% of the funds would have to go, of the monies would have to go to cities within the counties, unless a different distribution is agreed to.
That's
what I understand that this thing does. I'm not saying whether I like it or dislike it.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to understand it.
You understand it.
Okay. All right. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions. One is, maybe Cliff Bence or staff, you can tell us, what was the transportation vote to pass it out of committee?
There were six votes in favor, two against, Sheehan and Widener.
Okay. Thank you. I am concerned about the 40% split revenue change. I think that puts us into a substantive, not a technical change from my reading of it. And I'm glad you asked the question, because I was having difficulty parsing this out. It is quite noticeable that we remove the 40% split to cities from the current July 1st, 2013 vehicle registration fees. And that, to me, is substantive, worthy of great conversation, and I'd be interested to see the cities on there and their viewpoint, and that we put it in for the post-2013. Let me just continue before you respond. And we put it in there. To me, that's quite substantive, and it may be in your mind a technical fix, but to me, that the words matter.
My understanding is that the original legislation removed the 40% split.
Yeah.
That's already done. The only thing that this change does with that piece is specify that those proceeds can be used to pay off bonds. So that's not changing here. It's being called out and specified because of the need to clarify the post-2013 piece of it. But it already was done in the original legislation. Frankly, if it wasn't, there would not be remotely enough money to build the Selwood Bridge.
Mr. Chair,
please.
If you look at the language of the House Bill 2001, similar, and if you look in line 11 here on the dash 3, it talks about amending section 40A. Now, the House Bill 2001 had, and you probably don't have it in front of you, and we could bring it next time.
71 sections.
It has, it's nice, thick. I mean, you know, it's... but it has section 40, 40A, 40B, and 40C.
Sorry about that.
And that type of double amending already existed in the House Bill 2001. That policy has been put in A, B, and C, saying this would be only open for these counties at this time with no sharing of the 40% because they need to build the bridge. Then, come 2013, A rewrites the original, the 40, and becomes the language. But since we have in the language that this is how it works, what we could amend in this bill or in this amendment is a 40A. We don't want to go back and amend Section 40. That's why we had to move the language around. But all the language that you see, in a way, exists or existed before in House Bill 2001. What did not exist is the Section 1 of it that basically specifies how these things come in succession. But other language truly does. The 26,000 pounds or less, that already is in House Bill 2001. And why was that important for the bill? Because the bridge and the discussion about the bridge and the funding of the bridge did not go through the cost responsibility section of the constitutional restrictions, and therefore there wasn't the state funding, because you don't have any state funding into the bridge itself. You have state funding for the approaches of the bridge at that time. So all these nuances would not have been as of course involved if we didn't have to go through the double amendment in the House Bill 2001 itself.
I appreciate your explanation. I am skeptical of it because I don't understand, and I respectfully am skeptical of it because I don't understand then when in House Bill 2179 that it is being removed from the language in Section 2. I will defer to other attorneys on this committee to tell me that they concur with what you just said. Because I'm not an attorney, but I am used to reading law and bills. I'm not used to reading bills and process. Another question that I have that is a bit bothersome to me, Section 2 is potentially enduring. With the language in Section 2.1 talks about constructing a bridge that crosses the Willamette River in the city of Portland, and I noticed that it removes, as Amendment 1 had specifically, the Selwood Bridge. Is it problematic to you to put the Selwood Bridge back into this language?
No. Not for us, no.
Not for
us. That's what we're building, the Selwood Bridge.
And Co-Vice Chair Erbrewer, just again to I was around in the last go-round in House Bill 2001 a little bit, and I believe the conversation was not to name, it's not typical to name something in statute, just like they didn't spell out Multnomah and Clackamas. So we have absolutely no problem with that change, but it was lots of other players and stakeholders involved in that bill.
Yes, the naming convention, Chair, is that's why they didn't want to say the Selwood Bridge in House Bill 2001. But if you...
You do understand my concern would be because of there's a lot of bridges that cross the Willamette River in the city of Portland, and I just wanted to clarify that. I'm done with my...
Chair, Representative Bence is looking for your attention.
Thank you, Chair, and Mazin, thank you for your explanation and hard work on this. And this is bringing back memories of 2 years ago, and I appreciate the complexity of the challenge and the clarification of my original misunderstanding. There was I had the privilege of serving on the subcommittee on this bill 2001, and recall the lengthy discussions of this exact issue. And I had forgotten the 26,000 pound issue, so thank you for reminding me of that. And I had also. I also recall the incredible amount of discussion about the registration fee issue and the need to figure out some way of paying for the bridge. It just as an aside, Madam Chair, it happened that I had seen the bridge from because I actually ran underneath it a couple of times when I was staying in Portland, and I ran even more quickly than I normally do to escape the possibility of falling concrete because I noticed big chunks of it had already given away. So I was hugely supportive of this effort, even though I live, thank God, 400 miles from it. I'm appreciative of Representative Wan's remarks. And we certainly want to get this right because the long-term impact of the registration fee issue is great. So I really like the conversation, and I wish my memory had been better so I hadn't had to blurt out the fact you were massively changing the law, which you're not. So thank you.
Thank you. Madam Butcher. Just briefly, I do not dispute or contend that the Selwood Bridge doesn't need to be replaced. That's not the source of any of my consternation or my opposition to this in the least. As a matter of fact, the Selwood Bridge needed to be replaced in 1997 when I drove across it twice a day going to law school. It is sorely in need of replacement. But the voters, respectfully, Mr. Co-Chair, the voters were never asked in Multnomah County. They're going to be asked in Clackamas County, and we'll see how that turns out. But they were never asked in Multnomah County. So the voters have no expectation of where their money is going, except for the fact that the county commission passed an ordinance and imposed this tax. So respectfully, I'm going to disagree with you on that, and we'll see how further events unfold. I'm very interested in amending the existing Section 2 to make it more equitable throughout the entire county. So I'll be pursuing that, and we'll see where that takes us. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see anybody on the list. Anybody else wanting to discuss HB 2179 at this time? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2179, and I think we are adjourned. Thank you.